This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. There's our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Our managing editor, Adam Burke, is going to join the program here a little bit later on in this very hour. And we're getting ready for the Open Championship, as they call it, the British Open, as we call it. Wes Reynolds, our Wednesdays with Wes, will break down his picks that he has today. But now that the Midsummer Classic has come and gone, Jensen Lewis, it's time to look to the second half of the year. Let's take a dip into those awards markets. That's where we'll begin today's edition of the Daily Diamond. Now, last night should not have any bearing going forward on some of these awards markets. And I'll get to what I'm getting at a little bit later on in this conversation. But when you look at the American League, that's where we'll start here with the MVPs, the Roys, the Cy Youngs, and certainly the manager of the year. But Jensen, we talk about these narrative-driven awards all the time. Is there any baseline criteria that you would look at for either MVP or any of these categories, to be honest with you, that you'd say this is the minimum that I'd need in order to cash that ticket?
Well, first, no Aaron Judge in the AL MVP race this year, so we will have a new winner. I do think that we'll watch for the trade deadline. If Yordan Alvarez is still a member of the Houston Astros, heck, is still a member of American League team, then he is going to be that man to beat. We had a real scary moment in that game last night where Junior Caminero gets hit on the hand. X-rays were negative. It sounds like he is going to be fine of his own accord. Said he's going to be ready to play in the games there for Tampa Bay on Friday. That is good news for my 20-1 ticket on him to win American League MVP. Mm-hmm. And I would say the narrative more so with that market will continue to be the best player in the best team. Can Caminero catch Yordan Alvarez? He certainly can, as far as homers, as far as, you know, looking at some of the vital statistics that you would need in an MVP conversation. As we sit here today and look at some of the bigger ones from the analytic community, just on the American League side alone, you're going to have a strong argument for Bobby Witt Jr. too, because he is your leader in offensive wins above replacement at 4.8. Yordan Alvarez is second at 4.4. Junior Caminero is down at 3.2. So you almost a win and a half more is Bobby Witt Jr. and Yordan Alvarez over a win more. Now, all that being said, I still think that we will get to a point where you have to recognize the best player on the best team. I would lean that Caminero has the inside track should he continue this assault. For what it's worth, Alvarez 31 homers and 70 ribbies, Caminero 28 homers and 59 ribbies. So, you know, looking at just brass tacks, both those guys are going to be right in the thick of things. And I don't know if Bobby Witt Jr. has the staying power. He'd have to get to 40 plus homers, you know, a bunch of stolen bases. He'd have to overcome where Kansas City will be a last place team.
And that's exactly where I was getting at, Jensen, is historically, and I've mentioned this on the program before, Andre Dawson is the last guy in the National League to win the MVP on a last place team. That was Chicago Cubs back in 1987. I'd forgotten about this one, though. Alex Rodriguez is the last guy to win it on an American League team in last place, and that was the Texas Rangers back in 2003. But we're still talking over 20 years. So again, these narratives that we talk about, like in Bobby Witt Jr. on a last place team right now in the Kansas City Royals, really win the MVP? History would say no, that's really not the case. And I kind of agree with it. Like, I get it, the analytics community. I get what they're going to talk about with wins above replacement. But I would also make the argument that Junior Caminero, with the expectation level that Tampa Bay had, and that's where the narratives start to play into it, that they were not expected to do what they're doing. And if they did win the East, and Caminero is the reason why, and he's got the say, haughtier numbers than Bobby Witt Jr., I would think he'd be the guy. And I think Alvarez, good point you made there about whether or not he's even on the team. I alluded to last night's performance. It should not affect certainly the voting. But when you have a guy like Dylan Cease, and we talked a little bit about this before the game last night, that voters are impressionable. And they see Dylan Cease go out there and dominate on the biggest stage and strike out the side against the National Leaguers. Cam Schwitler didn't play in this game. I wonder, Jensen, it should not have a carryover effect. It should be in a vacuum, but you know that's not real life sometimes, if that's going to make that race even tighter. It's already tight right now with Schwitler at plus $1.25 and Dylan Cease the second choice at $1.35.
It won't have any impact. I know that plenty of voters who have a vote, they will treat it as an exhibition, which it is. Great for pomp and circumstance, but will not factor into the statistics that will go into the vote. For what it's worth, Dylan Cease at the break does lead Cam Schlittler in pitching wins above replacement. Dylan Cease at 3.7, Cam Schlittler at 3.4. Joe Ryan is third. And I bring up Joe Ryan just because will he be a member of the Minnesota Twins by the time we get past the trade deadline? Very interesting guy there. Only three pitchers that are at 3.3 wins above replacement on the pitching side of the American League or higher. It's Joe Ryan, Cam Schlittler, and Dylan Cease. Farther down the board, I have a 60-1 future on Davis Martin to win the Cy Young. Now, the White Sox will need to continue how well they've played here for him to be in that market. And I think he's going to have to significantly increase the strikeouts per nine. He is at 8.25 right now. That is dwarfed by the gentleman in front of him, particularly Schlittler and Cease. Cease is at 13.5, which is astronomically high for a starting pitcher. And Schlittler is at 10.39. So just food for thought on that. There are eight starting pitchers right now with a 10 or higher strikeouts per nine rate so far this season. And you're looking at Dylan Cease, Jacob DeGrom, Gavin Williams, Joe Ryan, Cam Schlittler, Taj Bradley, Reed Detmers, and Ryan Weathers in that category. So I think it's a two-man race at this point. Injuries and workload are going to be something to watch. That is something with Cam Schlittler. And I told this to you a month or so ago, and even we had Matt Youmans on, who has, what, upwards of a 300-1 ticket on Schlittler to win the AL Cy Young. With where the Yankees are, and with the attrition to their rotation so far this year, Dave, they're going to bubble wrap Cam Schlittler down the stretch to make sure he not only gets through the finish line healthy, but also with enough in the tank to be highly effective in what they hope is a long postseason run. So factor that in. Toronto is still chasing a playoff spot. Not that the Yankees aren't. They're comfortably in one. But remember that if you want to hitch your wagon to Dylan Cease, there's a lot of meaningful innings that he's going to have, and he has that veteran odometer already where there's not going to be any training wheels on him. They're going to let him go.
Right.
They're going to let him do his thing. So he's got a chance to slingshot past Cam Schlittler if he continues on this run.
I tell you, you are much more confident than I that they will not base anything off of last night. They shouldn't. It should be in a vacuum. Treat it as the exhibition it is. I always worry about voters, and we don't know exactly what they're judging it on. National League side here, I want to start with the Cy Young because we get why the Miz is an overwhelming favorite at this juncture at minus 550. The problem there is if he's got any arm trouble, and we know that's why he didn't pitch here, is, you know, tired arm, we're just going to rest him in the second half. I worry about that. And that same scenario you just mentioned for Schwitler, would they do that with the Miz in Milwaukee? And that could open the door, dare I say, for a Zach Wheeler at 16-1. Do you read the board the same way?
Man, this is as dominant a first half that we've seen from a starting pitcher in a while. And Dave, I'll give you some of the peripherals. Jacob Mizorowski has surrendered 57 hits in 111 innings and leads the league in strikeouts at 167. He also has a 162 ERA. Now, we will monitor, you know, the arm issue and see where it's going. We are told that this was precautionary. There is nothing to indicate anything is severe. All that being said, I think Zach Wheeler, because of the all-star snub, you want to talk about the exhibition meaning something. Don't be surprised if Zach Wheeler is just guns blazing. And he already has been from what he's done since he came back. Dave, if you go back to when he made his first start, and I believe this was back on, I think, April 25th, only Jacob Mizorowski has more strikeouts than Zach Wheeler does. He is 10-1 with a 2.13 ERA since April 25th. If you're going to hitch your wagon to someone there, it is Zach Wheeler or bust for me, because He is PO'd beyond belief about the All-Star snub, and he will use that. You also have the narrative street at play here. Phillies have been really hot. If they go run down the Braves and win the division, they're going to be in that top two, top three of wins in the National League. Zach Wheeler, Jesus Luzardo, Christopher Sanchez, since April 25th, Dave, 108, 103, 101 strikeouts respectively. Only Jacob Mizorowski has more than those three in that time span. It is wild looking at that rotation, how good they've been.
Yeah, and that's why I think your tickets are live in Philadelphia. And by the way, manager of the year, if you made a play before the season began, I feel bad for you in the regard that Don Mattingly wasn't even on your ballot. You didn't have the opportunity to bet Don Mattingly because he wasn't the skipper at the beginning of the year. He replaces Rob Thompson, and now he's the short shot at plus 250 to win this award. It's been a remarkable turnaround, so I can understand why. But McCullough down with the fighting fish, Jensen, at 5-1.
Bingo.
Is he right? That's kind of where I look and go, wouldn't that be where you put your vote?
Well, if you think that Clayton McCullough wins manager of the year, that would be predicated on the Marlins winning the division. So you might as well just go play the Marlins at what, 13-1 right now. I've got a ticket on them at 35-1. Dave, we talked about the little lottery ticket from one of our viewers saying, if you want the Tigers to win the Central, Marlins to win the East, that's 111-1. Take a shot on Miami now at 13-1. I've got them at 35-1. They've got the rotation. They've got the bullpen. They've got the offense. What a race we've got in the East here in the second half.
I got them plus 750 just to make the postseason, but boy, I'm wondering if I should double dip a little bit and take a stab at that divisional price as well. Got some British Open bets, and Jensen has some as well. That's next right here at VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge, but what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
There is no shortage of betting opportunities this summer. Daily Major League Baseball, got the World Cup final coming up on Sunday. The countdown to our football season is underway. That's why it is the perfect time right now to lock in VSiN's football special for just $175. You're going to get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl, which includes our all-new 2026 and 2027 NFL betting guide. It's going to help you attack futures, win totals, divisional races, and the entirety of the upcoming season. Plus, you're going to get daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and coverage of every major sport along the way. And remember, the earlier you sign up, the more value you will get. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Jensen, we appreciate all the emails we've been getting here since we opened up this new account. You can hit us up at buythebooks@VSiN.com. Very cool that we've been getting a lot of these responses. We really do mean that. Everybody that's reached out, the show is nothing without you guys watching and listening every day. So, Jensen, pretty cool from some of the inquiries we've had, from whether it's just about gambling in general, parlays and the like, and or that they're watching us and listening all across the country. I know it makes your day and it makes mine as well.
Absolutely. By the way, Chris McCarthy, who had emailed us in from Boston a bit ago, Jensen, morning, meant to share one thing with you. Know you're a Vandy grad. My best friend's nephew has committed to Vandy. Matthew Smith, quarterback from California, got some serious skills. I'm so fired up for a road trip to Vandy in the future. No doubt in my mind, he'll be leading the charge for them at some point. Let's go. You know, I love me some Anchor Down there, Chris. Always appreciate you tuning us in every single morning. We are going to be starting that college football preview in earnest next week, my friend. Looking forward to breaking it down. Can you believe it, Dave? We are, what, 7 weeks away from Ireland?
Amazing.
Between North Carolina and TCU. Let's go. Cannot wait for good old American football coming up in a few weeks' time.
I mean, can we bank on a Bill Belichick? We're on to Ireland. I mean, I can't wait to hear those press conferences here to get us ready for college football season. Let's get into some of these bets that we have, certainly in the Open Championship. And I've added some of these. Some of these are fun pizza money plays. I want to kind of point that out. But I am taking some stabs here at some numbers that I felt like were good price points. And the first and foremost one that I played was Chris Gotterup at 45-1. Now, again, you're not going to find that a lot of books. You have to search. And sometimes the point of that is I got that a week ago, Jensen. I felt like it was a number that just hung out there a little bit too long. It's clearly been adjusted now. He's about 25-1 at most shops that you're going to see. But I do think we talk about these things, hop on them when you get a playable number like that. So am I picking Chris Gotterup to necessarily win the British Open this week? Not necessarily, but at that price point, I will bet it every day of the week and twice on Sundays when you get a playable number. To that point, I actually like Patrick Reed a lot this week, and he came close to getting me low American last week at the Scottish. Really good week for Patty Reed last week. 25-1. Now, we talked about the setup of this golf course a little bit, and we're going to talk much more about this with Wes Reynolds at the end of this program today. It's going to be firm and fast, right? So they're going to be able to run these things out there. Patrick Reed's not the longest hitter. And, of course, length is always an advantage in every tournament you're going to play. But not this weekend. Some of the smaller knockers might be able to keep up with those bigger knockers hitting irons out there, just going to roll for days. Patrick Reed, this is his type of golf course. Keep the ball low if there is any wind, and he's a magician around the greens. If Scotty falters and is not Scotty, okay, and I think Wyndham Clark's going to have another good week. I talked about him earlier in the program as well. And I do like Chris Gotterup this week. I think Patrick Reed is on par with those guys. So if Scotty doesn't run away with this from the top American spot, at 25-1, that was a price point I had to play. I played Tom McKibben last week, and he had a solid week just outside of the top 30. Wasn't dynamic. But if you look at the live golfers out there this week, and I know John Rahm is going to be the first one that everybody's going to look at, right? Tyrrell Hatton's going to be another one that you're going to look at. Well, Tom McKibben, who's a Northern Irish laddie, just like Rory McIlroy, he was one of those guys a couple years ago before he went over to live golf and was coming up that to keep an eye on this kid. He's wiry thin, and he can really get it out there. And he's going to be really, he loves to play links golf, obviously, growing up in Northern Ireland. I think it's 16-1 for a longer shot for the LIV golfers, and it's not a deep LIV field past Rahm and Hatton. That's a price point I'm willing to play. Now, the playoff one is interesting. The price point I couldn't pass at plus 350. It is kind of a crapshoot a little bit. I think this is a little bit more coin flippy, and that's why I played the number at plus 350. Well, could Rory, Scotty, even Matty Fitz go out there and dominate this field? Yes, but because it's firm and fast and because the rough might not be that big of an issue, I think other guys are going to be able to hang around the top of that leaderboard. So I'm just hoping for some drama on Sunday to cash that plus 350 ticket that there is a playoff. Now, this is my long shot, fun play, and I really do like the play as well. This is including ties people, Patrick Reed, who I just spoke about, Tom McKibben, who I just spoke about. I really do like their chances to make the cut. You make the cut, you got a really good shot to get inside that top 30. And then there's my guy, Jocko, who should have gotten us that big ticket, Jensen, we had for top five at the U.S. Open. I think he's got a game for any golf course out there. Love him in the top 30 this week. And Marco Penge, another Englishman that's not getting enough talk. I think he's flying below the radar in England this week at Royal Birkdale. Like his chances to make the cut. And then getting that top 30, that pays 55-1, including ties, Jensen. That's my official card, and I will be adding as the week goes.
Wow, I just played your top 30 finish parlay on DraftKings a little over 60-1. So a nice Let's little go. Payout there as well. Patrick Reed also at 26-1 on DraftKings, so I'll tail you there, sir. I like a couple of the big dogs here this week, and no surprise, we're going to get Matty Fitzpatrick not only in an outright market at about plus 1950, also have him as a top five to cover that. I do actually like your boy Ludvig. He's going to drift for me, I know, in some odds markets, but I'll take him at a little over 5-1 for a top five finish, as well as 31-1 in the outright market. Colin Morikawa, a lot of people going to overlook him, I think, this week, just because of the issues with the back still. But I like him at a top 10 finish, including ties, plus 260. I will take him at 31-1. I mentioned to you since the start of the week, love Tyrrell Hatton with his links history. I think he's great. I'm with you on Patrick Reed. So Hatton at 40-1 to win it. Patrick Reed at 62-1 to win it. And I played both of them for top 20 finishes. Hatton at plus $1.40 and Patrick Reed plus $1.86. Now, our no-fly zone, backed by popular demand this week, the three big names that I'm fading, not only fading, but to miss the cut. Brooks Koepka, minus $1.13. Bryson DeChambeau to complete the grand slam of major miscuts this year, plus $1.30. And then I know he's going to be popular. Victor Hovland, I'm actually thinking the inconsistency surfaces here. I like it plus 270 to miss the cut. If he beats me, I'll tip my cap. The Viking Row got sent home from these Estados Unidos, Dave. He is going to get sent home before the weekend. It's not as big of a flight back to Norway for him. But I think those are the three no-fly zone candidates I played to miss the cut.
I kind of picking up what you're putting down with Vic. It's a guy I love to root for, right? He's one of those most interesting guys you probably want to sit down and have a beer with because he's just, his mind is, he's a different thinker. But I'm with you. Like, he could be one of those guys that could be in it to win it on Sunday or miss the cut. I don't know if there's much of a middle ground when he's running hot. But when it goes south, he can go south in a hurry. I will tell you this. I thought about playing Scottie Scheffler to miss the cut at 6-1. I did not pull the trigger, America. One, I after listening to him, and I think your read on that, and please go back by the Books podcast, take a listen on your time. We played some sound from Scotty earlier in the program, and I think your read on it was spot on, that he almost, I don't want to say that missing the cut last week at the Scottish was a good thing, because I don't know if it's ever a good thing, but he said it was better than finishing second. Like he definitely had that pressure, you could see, of winning was wearing on him a little bit. So maybe that reset and recharge will serve Scotty well. So I'm kind of with you now that if there is, I like the number at 6-1, but really, is Scottie Scheffler going to lay a dud 2 weeks in a row? I don't think that's really going to happen. So I end up laying off that. I don't know if I like him to win. I talked about this earlier in the week. That's why I had him in the no-fly zone. But he is drifting in the market. And again, if you can get him at a respectable price at 9-1, dare I say, then I might rethink that. The number would change my opinion of that after listening to Scotty over the last 2 days, and he does sound a lot better mentally. But let me ask one other thing very quickly. The pairing is Scotty, Tyrrell, and Bryson. What are we doing to Scotty Scheffler with those two head cases they put him with?
I think he'll be fine, to be fair. I mean, he's already said, hey, we're all going to die someday, so I'm going to enjoy it while it's here. I don't think he's worried about it. For what it's worth, if you want Scotty Scheffler into double digits before they even tee off, you got to get it in before 3 p.m. Eastern. England to qualify for the final, Scotty Scheffler to win the Open, that's over 13-1 if you want a little cross-board parlay.
And that's a better way to play it. And Scotty's right, I think. We're all going to die one. Sad, Scotty. Very morbid. When we come back, let's talk to our managing editor. Adam Burke's going to join the program. He's next right here at Beeson by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
If you're betting at Circus Sportsbook for a limited time, you can fund your wagers and contest entries with crypto using Burra Pay and pay no Burra Pay transaction fees. It's fast, secure, another way Circa continues to innovate for sports bettors. So visit burrapay.com to learn more. You can take advantage of fee-free crypto wagering before August 31st. It's exclusively at Circa Sportsbook at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Burra Pay transaction fees waived as part of campaigns. Standard cryptocurrency network and exchange fees still may apply. But what a deal right there through August 31st if you are a crypto person out there. And I know many of you are. Back alongside Jensen Lewis, Dave Ross here with you as well. We're always looking forward to our conversations with our managing editor here at the network. Adam Burke joins the program. Give him a follow on X at Skating Tripods and joins us now here on the Progressive Guest Line. And Adam, good morning to you, sir. I know that people are excited for football season and not just the NFL. and that we got this college football guide that people are working around the clock on now. How is that one coming along?
Yeah, what's up, boys? Yeah, the I talked about this yesterday on my hit on a money moves, and I completely believe that this is true. I think this is the most important guide that we do every single season.
Wow.
Especially now when you think about the context of college football, it's basically just free agency, right? You know, and there's so many guys going in and out of these programs, over 30 new head coaches again for this season. So it's really hard to keep up with, right? In the NFL, there's 32 teams. It's plastered all over the news cycle and all of that. In college football, there's 138 FBS teams. Shout out to Sacramento State and North Dakota State, the two new teams that we have for this year. There's a lot of player movement. There's a lot of stuff going on. It's impossible to keep up with, which is why we do it for you. So that college football betting guide coming out Monday, August 3rd over at vsin.com. Speaking of August 31st with that Burrow pay thing, we also have our NFL 2.0 betting guide coming out, our post preseason look at the NFL. But that college guide coming up on August 3rd, I think it's the most important one that we do given the volume of betting on college football and just the volume of transactions and transfer portal movements and all of that. You definitely want to get your hands on this one over at vsin.com.
A huge day, August 3rd, not only for the college betting coming out, college guide coming out, but also the MLB trade deadline is going to be that afternoon as well. So massive day in sports. And let's start there for the MLB future side with you, buddy, because Dave and I have kind of been going through some of the bold takes that I had for our MLB betting guide. It was great to collaborate with you on it. We've actually done pretty well. It was great going back and seeing where you and I fell, you more on the analytics side, me more on the player side, but it really gelled together. And a team that we were pretty decently high on, the Pittsburgh Pirates. You've got a manager of the year play you like on Don Kelly. I'm right with you, man. This has been as good a story in the National League as anyone so far.
Yeah, so I think there's a few things in play here, right? I mean, you know, you got to keep in mind that these awards markets are voted on by writers, right? So they want a story to tell. They want something that they can convey in written form that's going to be compelling, going to tell, as you mentioned, you know, a good story about this team. They don't make the playoffs very often. This is a Pirates team made the playoffs from 2013 to 2015. That's it since 1992. So if they're able to make the playoffs, this is truly a big accomplishment here, given the, you know, the sentiment about the cheap ownership and all of that. Also, Paul Skenes has not been Skenesian throughout the course of this season. You know, started out pretty good, and then things have kind of tailed off a little bit. If the Pirates are able to overcome that and get themselves into the playoffs, I think that's another good narrative to kind of attach to Don Kelly. But look, guys, I mean, this is a team. Yeah, they're 50-47 here at the All-Star break. But if you look at Clay Davenport's adjusted standings, by third-order win percentage, they're about five games behind where they should be. And third-order win percentage takes into account the quality of the opponents that you've played. And they've actually played one of the tougher schedules in Major League Baseball here to this point. They're also 56-41 by base runs, which is a context-neutral standings metric offered by FanGraphs. So this is a team that could be five or six wins better than they actually are. Maybe that shows up here in the second half. They're going to be playing some meaningful games for the first time in a long time. I don't think they have to win the division for Don Kelly to win this. I think they just have to get in. I think at 9-1, you know, it's kind of a do the Pirates make the playoffs, yes, no type of bet. I think Don Kelly to win manager of the year is not a bad look at all.
All right, Berkey, now that they've officially turned the fountains off, at least for me in the betting market with Kansas City in the AL Central, I'm starting to look at those Motor City Kitties. And I know that's a team you really liked at the beginning of the year. And then, of course, you get the Scooble injury and everything looks like it's lost there in Detroit. It doesn't look lost now. It feels like they might be a team that could be a play-on team. What do you see for Detroit in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is just kind of wishful thinking. I'm just trying to will it to fruition because I have a lot of Tigers exposure from the start of the season. And obviously, it's been a very, very disappointing campaign to this point. And I will say, I mean, this is definitely contingent on them being able to keep Tarek Skubal around. I'm thinking that they will because the AL is just so weak this season. If you can get in, I mean, the Rays are definitely beatable. The Yankees are beatable, in my opinion, as well, especially if you can run out Tarek Skubal two or three times in a playoff series. I think they'll hold on to him. I think they'll take that shot. So I think Tigers to be the number three seed in the American League is 22-1 over at DraftKings. It's kind of a alternate way of playing. Will the Tigers win the AL Central? Because if they do, they're probably the three seed, right? The team that wins out of the AL West should be the number two seed. So I'm looking at this one. I think there's some good value on it. The Tigers, you talk about third order win percentage that I referenced earlier. They're seven games behind where they should be right now. They should be leading this division by 3.5-4 games, according to third order win percentage. From a base run standpoint, they're a much better team than their actual record. Same thing with Pythagorean win loss. They're coming around. I thought this offense was pretty decent coming into the season. Now they're starting to show it. Hopefully they do keep Scooble, but I think this one is definitely worth a play as an alternate way to bet the Tigers to win the Central. Number three seed, 22-1, because I don't think the White Sox pitching holds up, and I just still don't think the Guardians are very good.
That's a great way to do it. They're five wins right now behind Texas. Detroit is, and that would be your top spot in the American League West. So I love the correlated play. I just told Dave and had a viewer ask us earlier about maybe some long shot candidates, and even 7-1, I think, is a great number for the Tigers to win the Central right now. We had three Cleveland Guardian rookies on display in the Midsummer Classic last night. A spectacular inning. By the way, they forgot to mention Parker Messick because they were trying to talk to all these people in the dugout. All he does is go out and shove in the second inning for a 1-2-3 scoreless frame. Cade Smith, they did catch Bryce Harper on the live mic, and he was saying how nasty Cade Smith was. He gets a scoreless inning. Travis Bezzano, unfortunately, a strikeout there, and also a way to end it in his final at-bat. But the one lone rookie that has been as impactful as any is Chase DeLauder. He wasn't there last night, but boy, did he just burst on the scene early in the year. You like him still at maybe a far larger number for Rookie of the Year. Adam, your explanation on where you think this is a viable play right now.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I don't think the Guardians are a very good team, but obviously the Central Division is there for the taking, and they very well could win it. And they've stayed afloat without the player that I think is the most valuable player in the league year in and year out, in Jose Ramirez. I'm not saying he should win MVP, but I'm saying in terms of individual player value to his team, what are the Guardians without Jose Ramirez over the last several years? And they've had to find that out with the broken hamate. And they've been able to stay afloat. Of course, a phenomenal sweep of the Marlins heading into the All-Star break. But Chase DeLauder here at 30-1, right? Again, this is voted on by writers. There's a story to tell here about Chase DeLauder, right? I mean, a guy who is hurt every single season in the minor leagues. And then he's able to do a lot offensively to keep this team in the running without their unquestioned leader in Ramirez. Since DeLauder came off the IL June 28th, 339 average, 381 on base, 610 slugging, four homers, four doubles, 60% hard hit percentage. For a guy that didn't get to play every day in the minors because he was hurt, I kind of think the injury was sort of a blessing in disguise to give him a chance to kind of recover a little bit, kind of rejuvenate himself, work on his body, all of that. Same thing here, I think, with the All-Star break, not going to the game, getting a little bit of time off. I think very valuable things for DeLauder and for Cleveland. If Cleveland is able to win this division again, DeLauder is going to be a massive part of it. So I think at 30-1, I know Kevin McGonigal leads the league in WAR and Murakami hits all the home runs and all of that, but DeLauder is going to be a big part of this if Cleveland is able to get this thing done. So I think at 30-1, that price point is very much worth a dart throw.
Adam, I love the Reds last year. They got home last day of the year and makes a big wild card push there, cashed a big ticket on them. This year, I stayed away from them. Then you saw the Hunter Green injury, and I didn't know what to make of them. Do you think that after a great start, it really feels like it's kind of come undone a little bit in Cincinnati? Does that continue in the second half?
Yeah, I think saying it's come undone a little bit is definitely a big understatement, Dave. This is a team, they started 20-11, and they won a bunch of one-run games to start the year. You know, they had some blowout losses, but were winning all the close games, stuff like that. Over their last 64 games, they're playing at a 58-win clip for the entire season. Ooh. So they are just completely down and out. They're in a division where everyone else is going to be fighting for something except for them. So their division games are probably going to be brutal the rest of the way. I like the Reds under 74.5. I don't think this is a good situation for Terry Francona to finish out the year. And I think they're going to be one of the very few sellers at the trade deadline, and they need to be one. So I like Reds under 74.5 the rest of the way.
The Reds are Weezer. The sweater song, they have come undone, that is for sure. Adam, great stuff as always. Everybody give him a follow over there on social media. And again, be a VSiN Pro subscriber for all access to all of our betting guides. We're back with Wes Reynolds next, right here at VSiN by the Book.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN. We'll be right back.
Beeson by the Books on this Wednesday morning. And Jensen Lewis, that means it's Wednesdays with the great Wes Reynolds. Does a great job here in the network. We always appreciate his insight here each and every Wednesday to break down the golf tournament du jour. And it's not just your run-of-the-mill now. It's the last major. We can't wait for this one over there at Royal Birkdale for the Open Championship, British Open, as we call it. And give him a follow on X at Wes Reynolds, number one, joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. If you're watching on FanDuel Sports Network or YouTube TV, Wes, that is some great gear that you have. Are you teeing it up later on today or this morning that we're not aware of?
I am not, unfortunately, but shout out to a listener who sent me the hat and then, hey, where'd you get that? And then I went ahead and got the pullover to boot here. So looking forward to the 154th Open here at Royal Birkdale.
Absolutely, brother. Champion golfer of the year, always something that we kind of laugh at since we have the United States Open, in which we believe is one of the toughest tests in golf. That's the operative word, though, I think, the test here, because it feels, Wes, looking at the course, at least these first couple of days, and then comparing to what the weather and conditions might be over the weekend, did that factor into your handicap seeing where this course ultimately lays out?
A little bit, Jensen, because Royal Birkdale, when you compare it to the other links courses in the Rota for the Open, pretty straightforward here. Not a lot of randomness that you get at some of these other tracks where the fairways are fairly flat. You're not going to get a lot of those tricky downhill lies or uphill lies. You're not going to get a lot. These balls could, if they're hit, they could like go into the rough, but you don't get like random bad bounces like you get in some of these other opens, like at Carnoustie or Troon or a place like that. So I think with this, it's a little bit what you see is what you get. It's a pretty straightforward setup, par 70, a little bit over 7,200 yards. The weather, at least the initial forecast, and that's always a key here, looks pretty sunny and pretty warm, actually, for an England summer, high 70s for the temperatures. But the winds don't look like they're doing all that much. Like, they'll be consistent breezes, but not overwhelming until maybe you get late in the rounds on both the weekend days, as you mentioned. So, yeah, I think that you had to take that into consideration. And really, what this is all about, and if you look at past previous opens at Royal Birkdale, last one, by the way, being in 2017, what kind of separates everybody, the top guys from everybody else, is the approach and also hitting fairways, driving accuracy, even though some guys will probably try to bomb and gouge because the rough doesn't look like it's overwhelming necessarily, but you still want those flat, even lies in the fairway. So I think the ball striking absolutely separates. And then you could be a little creative around the greens here as well. The short grass is around the green. So there's more than one way to kind of play it if you're short of the green, which you will be if you hit it in one of the many fairway bunkers.
Hey, great breakdown, because again, when you talk ball striking, then it could get you to a guy like a Tommy Fleetwood, who might be the sentimental choice this week with this being his home course. But I just wonder about the pressure on not just him, but I know Justin Rose would be a popular choice. Any Englishman, you know, you pick that at Royal Birkdale, they're going to be the fan favorites this week. Do you look to specifically fade away from those guys because of the added pressure of playing at home, if you will? Or do you think the golf course setup should be good for a guy like Fleetwood?
Ordinarily, I would, Dave, but I did have Fleetwood on the card this week. And it's not necessarily because it's his hometown, because you're paying the tax here. Because if you look at his number, he should be in like the mid-20s. He should be in 25, 28-ish, maybe even to one, because he doesn't have the win equity. He hasn't won yet this year. But in terms of the profile, first in scrambling, third around the green, sixth in driving accuracy, he'd be a very popular winner, and 14th anywhere in his last five starts, no worse than. He's been terrific. So is Matt Fitzpatrick, who does have the win equity, by the way, this year, three victories, but has been a little bit off in the majors, 18th, 14th, and 22nd, respectable, but not right there in the mix. But number one in approach, number one in around the green. The putter is starting to pick up. He gained 4.5 strokes with the putter last week. So I think you got to go with a lot of the guys that make sense. And really, if you look at the Open over the years, I think it's 10 of the last 12 and 18 of the last 25. A player that won the Claret Jug and became the champion golfer of the year has already won in the calendar year, has won some kind of event somewhere in the world already. So winning begets winning, and I think you see that here at the Open.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating look at it too, because there are some bigger names here, and I know you have Matty Fitzpatrick, Colin Morikawa on there. Let me ask you about a couple of the other Euros here in Robert McIntyre and Tyrrell Hatton. I absolutely love where Hatton is. I was telling Dave earlier in the week, a guy that knows links really well, feels like he's been there and right on the precipice. Give me your insights on Bobby Mack and where Tyrrell Hatton line up in your projections this weekend.
Yeah, Bobby Mack, by the way, T3 at the home Scottish Open, where he has won before. Number one in the field on approach, by the way. He gained 10 strokes on the field over the course of 4 days for approach. And I think he's kind of over that neck injury he had in the spring, kind of around March, April, had that neck injury going into the Masters, looks to be over that. He is ninth on the tour for putting this season, trying to be that first Scotsman since Paul Lawrie, by the way, back in 1999. Remember him and John Vandeveld in the late duel at Carnoustie, where Vandeveld had to remove the shoes and socks and get in that water. So hopefully that fate doesn't befall anybody here. But McIntyre has been pretty proven at the Open. 3 top eights on 6 starts, T7 last year at Royal Portrush. And then as for Tyrrell Hatton, only T17 last week, but did lead the field for putting. 3rd at the Masters, 7th at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock earlier this summer. So he's becoming more of a regular factor in major championships. And he's already won, by the way. He did win in June over in Spain at Valderrama on LIV to begin June. So he became a first-time father to, like, a lot of guys in this field. Of course, Sam Burns, Colin Morikawa is another one. So maybe that calmed his demeanor a little bit. He's not going to be quite like, placid or anything, but I think that's enough to get him across the finish line, and he's becoming a regular factor. I think he's got the game to win a major, and if there's a first timer, I think both of those two guys would really fit the bill.
Wes, where are you on the elephant in the room that is Scottie Scheffler, coming off his first miscut in seemingly forever last week at the Scottish? And then, they're asking him about his mortality, not just in golf, but in life. It's like weird questioning, it felt like, for Scottie. He seems like he's in a good place going into this defense of his Open Championship from a year ago. The numbers, though, are drifting on him in the marketplace. I mean, for Scottie Scheffler purposes here, you can find some 8-to-1s out there. You normally don't get that. Where are you on Scottie in the betting market?
He modeled number one like he does every single week when you look at all the stats and kind of commingle them all together. But he's just not quite at the tip top as he's been. He's not really played poorly. I'm willing to ignore that miscut. I mean, it's been 4 years, right? It was Memphis in 2022 since he last didn't make a weekend. So I think he's fine. But he's just not what he was, I think, a year or even 2 years ago. So he could certainly win. He's the guy that is the defending champion golfer of the year, by the way. So he never drifts too far in terms of the odds board. But him and Rory, this is very little separation. This is as little separation as we've seen in probably over a year and a half in terms of the odds board. And I think it's just because he hasn't won since January. So it's like, hey, this isn't the Scottie that we're necessarily used to. Not that he's playing badly, but I don't really have a position on him as of yet this week. Maybe I get there or try a top 10 or some kind of placement market, but I don't really have anything on Scottie this week. So when he wins by 4 like he did last year, we'll all have egg on our faces.
All right. Last one from me, brother. In the back end of your car, Justin Rose, Russell Henley, Matt McNealy. Of the three there, do you have a favorite that you really like to make a deep run potentially into Sunday afternoon?
Probably Justin Rose, Jensen, because he does have the unfortunate distinction of being the only one to lose 2 sudden death playoffs at the Masters and still wants that green jacket. But I think the Open is the one he really wants the most. It's come close twice, 2nd at Carnoustie, 2nd at Troon 2 years ago. Remember, it was here at Royal Birkdale in 1998 where he was a 17-year-old amateur and finished T4 in this thing. So kind of full circle here as he's approaching 46. He's gone 3rd, 10th, and 11th. In the 3 majors this year, and old guys do win the majors here. You've seen guys in their 40s win the Claret Jug, Darren Clark, Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson, all within kind of the last 15 years, all won within their 40s. I think that there's one more major in Justin Rose, even though he's on the back nine of his career. And I think Royal Birkdale would be a fairly, obvious site for it to happen. I just think that he will be able to handle this well, and he's a proven commodity this year in the majors and has gone very much under the radar.
Yeah, if it's not Tommy Fleetwood as the number one rooting choice, Justin Rose might be the guy right there, 1A with Fleets. Bless you the best. We appreciate it, man. Everybody check out Long Shots, by the way, if you have not. Great breakdown, as they do each and every week. If you want more VEASAN, of course you do, VEASAN.com, VEASAN Watch App, a numbers game. Dustin Sweetelson, Kelly Bidlin, they're on deck.